Yashodanandana Brajajanaranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Kunja Bihari Jayam Vishnupad Paramahamsa Puri Gajakacharya Sarasata Sri Srimadis Divine Grace Abhaichana Ravinda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Kopi Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Prem Sekaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nicha Anand Sri Roita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopi Gopinath Shamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai, Sri Gangamai Ki Jai, Sri Jamnamai Ki Jai, Srimati Tulsi Devi Maharani Ki Jai. His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Your Lordship, Sri Sri Radha Shyam Sundar Ki Jai. Your Lordship, Sri Sri Krishna Balaram Ki Jai. Your Lordship, Sri Sri Gaunitai Ki Jai. Your Lordship, Sri Sri Lachana Shinga Dev Ki Jai. Iskandu Raman Reti Dham Ki Jai. Itai Gaur Primanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the lotus feet of Sri Sri Guru Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So before I begin, I just want to say and probably apologize to some that you might have heard in the past classes, this one and probably in the future. I have some ongoing throat problems, and sometimes you might hear a little bit of different sounds coming out that not supposed to. So I'm battling with that, so please bear with me. So today we'll be reading, starting off a new chapter, chapter 56 of Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, entitled A Shamantaka Jewel. So I'll be reading the chapter summary and do text 1. So chapter summary. This chapter describes how Lord Krishna recovered the Shamantaka Jewel to allay false accusations against him and married the daughters of Jambavan and Satyajit. By enacting the pastimes involving the Shamantaka jewel, the Lord demonstrated the futility of material wealth. When Sukadev Goswami mentioned that King Satyajit offended Lord Krishna on account of the Shamantaka jewel, King Parikshit became curious to hear the details of this incident. Thus Sukadev Goswami narrated the story. King Satyajit received the Shamantaka gem by the grace of his best well-wisher, the sun god Surya. After fastening the gem to a chain, which he then hung around his neck, Satyajit traveled to Dwarka. The residents, thinking he was the sun god himself, went to Krishna and told him that Lord Surya had come to take his audience. But Krishna replied that the man who had come was not Surya, but King Satyajit, who looked extremely effulgent because he was wearing the Shamantaka jewel. In Dwarka, Satyajit installed the precious stone on a special altar in his home. Every day, the gem produced a large quantity of gold, and it had the additional power of assuring that wherever it was properly worshipped, no calamity could occur. On one occasion, Lord Sri Krishna requested Satyajit to give the gem to the king of the Yadus, Ugrasena, but Satyajit refused, obsessed as he was with greed. Shortly thereafter, Satyajit's brother, Prasena, left the city to hunt on horseback, wearing the Shamantaka jewel on his neck. On the road, a lion killed Prasena and took the jewel away to a mountain cave, where the king of the bears, Jambavan, happened to be living. Jambavan killed the lion and gave the jewel to his son to play with. When King Satyajit's brother did not return, the king presumed that Sri Krishna had killed him for the Shamantaka jewel. Lord Krishna heard about the rumor circulating among the general populace, and to clear his name, he went with some of the citizens to find Prasena. Following his path, they eventually found his body and that of his horse lying on the road. Further on, they saw the body of the lion Jambavan had killed. Lord Krishna told the citizens to remain outside the cave while he went in to investigate. The Lord entered Jambavan's cave and saw the Shamantaka jewel lying next to a child. But when Krishna tried to take the jewel, the child's nurse cried out in alarm, bringing Jambavan quickly to the scene. Jamavan considered Krishna an ordinary man and began fighting with him. For 28 days continuously, the two fought until finally Jamavan grew weak from the Lord's blows. Now understanding that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Jambavan began to praise him. The Lord touched Jambavan with his lotus hand, dispelling his fear, and then explained everything about the jewel. With great devotion, Jambavan gladly presented the Shamataka jewel to the Lord, together with his unmarried daughter, Jambavati. Meanwhile, Lord Krishna's companions, having waited 12 days for Krishna to come out of the cave, returned to Dwarka despondent. All of Krishna's friends and family members became extremely sorrowful and began regularly worshipping Goddess Durga to assure the Lord's safe return. Even as they performed this worship, Lord Krishna entered the city and in the company of his new wife. He summoned Satrajit for the royal assembly, and after recounting to him the entire story of the Shamataka jewel's recovery, gave the jewel back to him. Satrajit accepted the jewel, but with great shame and morose. He went back to his home, and there he decided to offer Lord Krishna not only the jewel, but also his daughter, so as to atone for the offense he had committed against the Lord's lotus feet. Sri Krishna accepted the hand of Satrajit's daughter, Satyabhama, who was endowed with all divine qualities. But the jewel he refused, returning it to King Satrajit. And now we have text one. Sri Sukha Vacha Satrajita Satanayam Krishnaya Krita Kilbishaha Shamantake Namanina Swayam Udyam Yadatavan Sri Sukha Vacha Satrajita Satanayam Krishnaya Krita Kilbishaha Shamantake Namanina Swayam Udyam Yadatavan Sri Sukha Vacha Satrajita Satanayam Krishnaya Krita Kilbishaha Shamantake Namanina Swayam Udyam Yadatavam. Please chant. Rishika Vacha Satrajita Satanayam Krishnaya Krita Kilbishaha Samantake Namanina Swayam Udyam Yadatavam. Swayam Udyam Yadatavam Sri Sukha Vacha Satrajita Satanayam Krishnaya Kritakil Bishaha Shamantake Namamina Swayambhu Jamya Dattava. Anyway, so we'll do the word for word. Sri Sukha Vacha. Sri Sukadev Goswami said, Satrajitaha, King Satrajit, Swa, his own, Tanayam, daughter, Krishnaya, to Lord Krishna, Krita, having committed, Kilbishaha, offense, Shamantakena, known as Shamantaka, Manina, together with the duo, Swayam, personally, Udyamya, striving, Datavan, he gave. Translation. Sukadev Goswami said, having offended Lord Krishna, Satrajit tried as best he could to atone for presenting him by presenting him with his daughter and the Shamantaka jewel. So, there is no purport. Om Agyana Tumrindasya Agyana Janashana Kaya Chakshuri Nirtanyana Tasmai Shri Guru Vinaya Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shumati Shula Vrubhau Prabhuti Namane Shri Shri Vindata Vijira Padapad Panta Jagayane Prabhupada Anarati Padaya Namashri Vrubhau Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shumati Bhakti Vedanta Samaniti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pachayana Nirvishesha Samyavadi Paschata Deshitayana. So, in this episode, starting off here in verse 1, we find that there are two contradictory presentations in this verse, and I'll explain why I say use the word contradictory later on, that there were two gifts offered to Lord Krishna. One was the Satrajit's daughter, Satyabhama, and the other was the Shamantaka jewel. So these two properties, per se, of King Satrajit, was they have two very different qualities and two very different values. Towards the end, as you read in the summary and towards the end of this chapter, we would understand that Lord Krishna gave the jewel back to King Satrajit, but he accepted the gift of Queen Satyabhama. So that's very significant. For one, Lord Krishna was showing the futility of material opulence, that this jewel, we understand, is so valuable, producing an average is a whole long description, but in essence it produces about 170 pounds of gold per day, and also wherever it resides and being properly worshipped, that entire area is protected from famine and disease, bodily discomforts, and so on and so on. So from that calculation, that point of view, it appears as though the jewel is extremely valuable. But from another perspective, we can try to understand why Krishna rejected that and why he accepted Satyabhama. On the very base of understanding, we can understand that, yes, Satyabhama is the goddess of fortune. She's meant to be with Krishna. So she's the large property. She's the goddess of fortune. Yeah, basically that's the case. But from a Vedic point of view, there are other reasons why Satyabhama was so valuable. Of course, if we go into some of the Puranas and Itihasas, Vedic histories, we would find some long description from previous times that all different the stories and the circumstances that led to this incident of King Satyajit presenting his beautiful daughter to Lord Krishna. So, in essence, and we can see from many Vedic references that one's daughter, one's children, but especially the daughter, is the most prized possession of the family. And in essence, as Krishna indicated, and Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur also commented, that he gave back the jewel because that wasn't as precious. Satyabhama was much more precious. So, if we look into the Vedic scriptures, from the very childhood, there is a culture of the value of one's children, and especially the daughter. We find that from very birth, these young girls, they are called Kanyakumari. Not exactly sure what the word means, but it implies the emblem of purity. And in many sacrifices, many offerings, many ceremonies, it's not uncommon to see that young girls are placed in front with water pots or giving offerings to increase auspiciousness. So this is one thing that stems from the Vedic culture. Because of their purity, it brings about the most auspicious atmosphere. And even when they're growing up, they become the most valuable jewel in the household of their parents. So much so that, and yet again, I don't remember the Vedic name for it, Asurya something, maybe someone may know. But basically what it means that even the son doesn't get the darshan of these young girls, because even if they have to come outside of their dwelling, their heads and faces are covered by their veils. So there is a word for it, Surya something, I don't remember what it was, but anyway, basically it means that even the son doesn't get their darshan. So much valuable they are. It's under this circumstance that Banasura, the whole story of Banasura came about because of he was so much protective of his daughter that his daughter never even seen a young boy before. That's so much so how they were protected. And one should try to understand and try to differentiate the difference between protection and restriction. So to understand that's going to take a whole another lengthy debate and understanding of how the Vedic system works and what was the standard at that time. That girls especially were so protected, extremely protected. And so in that case, Banasura, he was extremely angry when he heard that a man, that's Anirudh, Krishna's son, was in the palace there with her. he had such a moat surrounding his palace, and there's so many levels of protection. Even with Rukmini, as we just passed here, there's so much protection and so much that surrounds. And what that does, it gives a quality to these young girls of extreme chastity. And when that chastity is there, then it becomes most auspicious in a household. So this is one aspect of Vedic culture, of chastity, protection, purity, and which brings about the most valuable gem. We also find that there are other cases, and many cases, where these young daughters are being offered to someone suitable as a gift. We understand in Vedic culture that a gift should be offered to the suitable party, proper gifting. So, but one should not misunderstand that offering one's daughter as a gift or as to be a wife of someone, that puts that girl in a position of disadvantage. Nowadays, they may think, well, the general idea is that, why should there be arranged marriage? Why should we just have to accept that? No, that shouldn't be the case. But from the Vedic point of view, in Vedic culture, it is understood, first of all, everyone is very highly qualified, even the daughters and the sons. The sons would go to Gurukul, the girls would be trained at home. But they were extremely qualified in Vedic culture, in knowledge, in the scriptures. They understand what should be done and what should not be done. We find the whole pastime here of the gopis of Vrindavan. They were cowherds, they never went to school. Yet they understood the highest conclusion of Vedic scriptures. That's why even Radharani, one of her name, is Hari Rasa Pandita. That means she understood the conclusion of the scriptures. She understood what gives the Lord the highest pleasure, the highest rasa. So they were highly intelligent, and they understand, these girls understand, that whatever arrangement is made for them, that is perfect for their situation. And that's an understanding that was always there. So they don't take it, well, I had a raw deal here, or I was harassed by not being given a choice. There are many cases where they had their choice to choose their own husband too, like the Swayamvar ceremonies of Draupadi, and there are many cases in Vedic culture. So these qualities of the female counterpart actually brings about a cultured condition in society. Is actually described in Vedic culture that the wife is the better half of the husband, and the mother is the center of the home. That's there in scriptures. So with these qualities of womanhood being of the Vedic standard, brings about a perfect situation. And because they are considered the greatest wealth, of course, not only girls but boys also, but girls is more so, because they are always to be protected from childhood to their youth to old age. And once they're protected and keep in this atmosphere where their purity is allowed to prevail, then auspiciousness prevails throughout that home or that situation where they are. As far as being very valuable in terms of their being the most valuable jewels, there are many evidences in the scriptures where one's child is so valuable that they would risk their lives or risk their reputation for their protection. We also find in the Mahabharata with Duryodhan, he disrespected his own guru, Lord Balaram. They defied the principles of warfare when Sambha went and kidnapped Duryodhan's daughter, Lakshmana. Just for the protection of his daughter, he disrespected his own guru. He disrespected the whole Kshatriya principles of warfare when they all had all the Kurava army surrounded Sambha. And it became a whole big scene just for the protection of his cherished daughter. Also, there are other cases of boys in the Chaitanya Charitamrita with Lord Nityananda when he was little. The sage came to his father's home, asked for Lord Nityananda to travel with him. That was the most hurtful thing to Hadai Pandit, his father. So much so that he fell unconscious. And his whole life air was coming out because his most valuable gem, his child, he had to offer to give for traveling, so to be away from him. We also find in the Ramayana, Lord Ramachandra, when his father, Dashrath, was approached by, Vishwamitra Muni? Approached that, please give me these two young boys to protect the sacrifice. King Dashrath, he wasn't able to accept that. He said, no, my boys are very young. I would give my word. I would go with my entire army. I'm a great Maharati. I'll go with my entire army. I would offer all protection to your sacrifice. I'll challenge anyone who stands in the way. But please don't ask for my boys. That's more valuable to him than life itself. And so much so that even when Lord Ramachandra was finally exiled, what happened? Maharaj Dashrath passed away from the separation, from the affection. He had so much, this entire kingdom was at his disposal, so much wealth and opulence, but his child was more valuable than that. So, similarly in Vedic culture, there are many evidences where the child, and especially the daughter, is most valuable. And as such, to offer the daughter as a suitable gift or suitable wife for a qualified husband is one of the greatest gifts that one can offer. In this case, with Lord Krishna, we're going to find coming up also with the Gorilla King, Jambavan. He took this gem, which was so valuable, and gave it to his child to play with as a toy. But his daughter was extremely protected. And when he realized that this is his Lord from the Ram Lila pastimes, that this is the same Lord Ramachandra, then he wanted to offer him the best he has in his possession. So the best he had was his daughter, Jambavati. And he offered Jambavati as his gift of offering. Similarly, Satrajit, he offered as gratitude the best he has in his possession to the Lord. So for us, we are engaging in devotional service, and we understand that the best there is to perform this service to the best of our ability. But what is there that we can best offer to the Lord? What is there that we can best offer? What is most dear to us?
We saw the evidences of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He went and prayed and he offered his entire family to the Lord that my entire family is here at your disposal. He made it as an offering. Srila Prabhupada's father also did the same thing when he was little. He went and prayed to the Lord that please accept this child as an offering to you and please engage him in your service. So for us, in devotional service, we can try to understand, try to see what is most valuable to us that we want to, want to offer to the Lord. So in a practical way, we engage, we offer devotional service in all aspects of Krishna consciousness. But if we finally analyze what is really most valuable and what is valuable, then there are different items that can come up. That what is most dear to us that we want to offer to Lord Krishna. We want to offer the best that we have. And naturally, the best that we have is what we would want to keep for ourselves. So what is that valuable jewel that we want to keep, that we always want for ourselves, that we should try to offer to Lord Krishna? You know, we have our bodies. We always want to be very attached to our bodies on the first part. It's the nature to be self-centered. So we have our attention that we want to offer to ourselves. We want to offer attention to ourselves. We see it, you know, throughout. That's one quality, one very, very valuable. Even if we lose our wealth or anything else, our self-respect and attention, we don't give that up so easily. We want to keep that for ourselves. So in Krishna consciousness, if we can offer that to Lord Krishna, offer that attention to Lord Krishna, as much as we want that attention for ourselves, then that becomes one of the greatest gift of gratitude that we can offer to the Lord. If we think about this for a minute, we can get into detail, we can get into different arguments, debate, we can get into different discussions, and see how this attention is so valuable to us. It's a real gem in the lives of everyone, whether they be devotees or non-devotees. This attention is always attention for ourselves. So in Krishna consciousness, the basic thing in devotional service is to transfer that attention from ourselves to Krishna, which means that we have to see ourselves as insignificant. Coming back to Shikshashtaka, verse 3, Trinada Pichani Chena. So this is the whole idea of offering, whether it's gratitude or any kind of offering to the Lord, to try our best to give what is best we have in our possession. And how to do that is what constitutes our greatest challenge in devotional service. With all, basically, we are full-time devotees. Yes, we are offering so much service. Yet every day, we are always thinking, how can we increase that service? How can we offer more? How can we indirectly offer more of our attention to the Lord rather than keeping that attention for ourselves? And if we look around in our own lives, we would see how that's manifested. That sometimes you see it manifested in our own dwelling. We have a mahal for ourselves, but a simple place where we come and worship. You know, that's just one idea. So there are in different ways that this can manifest. Of course, there are cases where, and yet coming back to the women folk, that where they can live in great opulences, at the same time, they can be as renounced as wanting to, willing anytime to offer, make that offering of whatever they have for the service of the Lord. There is one story of one disciple of Yamunacharya. He had a temple, so he had a temple president who was Grihastha, and he was living in his little Grihastha situation with his wife, and in Vedic times, they were all very well dressed, a lot of valuable jewels. I know my mother had about maybe 25 pounds of gold jewelry. She used to have me when I was a little boy to go up and hide it in the ceiling so that the thieves wouldn't get it. And I used to really get a hard time because I had to stretch between the tin roof and try to reach out my hands holding up about 20 pounds. It was kind of difficult, but she had so many jewelry. And all the ladies were like that. When my mom dressed to go to a function, religious function or something, I would ask her, hey, where did your neck go? Because it's like all covered with all so much of whatever they're called. And are all so many bangles and this and that. So anyway, so this opulence is there. So in this temple of Yamunacharya, there was one brahmachari. And so one day he came frustrated to his Guru Maharaj. He said, I want to leave the ashram. He said, I want to go and join the sages that they are renounced, that this ashram, we have grihasthas here and they're very attached, so I don't want to be trained in this bad way. So his Guru Maharaj asked, what are you talking about? He said, just look at the temple president's wife. She's so opulently dressed, she has so much valuable, so many jewels, and so much attachment. So I want to go and join the sages who are very renounced. So he said, do you think that's true? He said, yes, I can see evidence. He said, okay, well, let's perform this experiment and we'll figure it out. So he said, tomorrow when the sages come and they go to the river to take their bath, I want you to go and get all of their belongings and mix them up. Just put X to Y and this sage went to that and mix them up. And you go and hide behind a tree and come back and tell me what happens. So this brahmachari, he did that. And afterwards he came back. So the guru asked him what happened. He said, when the sages came back out of the water, there was a great commotion. They were arguing with each other, that they were accusing each other, well, you took my belongings. And there was an argument and a commotion. And he said he was really amazed by that they were arguing over this little possession that they have. So he said, okay, well, here's what I want you to do for me tonight. That while the temple president is sleeping in his ashram, in those days, they just have their windows open. He said, I want you to go and try to steal the jewelry, the bangles, from his wife's hand and tell me what you observe. So that night, when they were sleeping, the wife, she was sleeping, she was torn on her one side. So he climbed through the window and he pulled the bangles off of one of her hands. So when he did that, she became awoke. So she awake and she turned on the other side. So he got scared and he ran out. So he stood outside the window and was observing. So she turned and she stretched the other hand. And she waited for a while. She didn't see anything else happen. So then she went into the other room and she woke her husband. And she called him. She said, you know what? Something is wrong in the temple. What is there? You must tell me. So the husband said, are you dreaming? What's going on? In the middle of the night, you're coming with this kind of question? So he said, yes, that it has to be that the temple is in financial need. So the husband said, what's going on with you? Why don't you go back to sleep? She said, no, that just now this brahmachari came to steal my bangles. So I allow him to take off all from one hand, and then I torn so that he can get the other. But then he got scared and ran away. So it has to be that the temple is in need of Lakshmi, so therefore he's trying to do his best, even if he has to steal some jewels, so as to help to maintain the temple. And I've been trying to give it to him, but he got scared and ran away. So he came back and he told that to his Guru Maharaj. And then his Guru Maharaj said, "Do you understand now?" He said, "Yes, I understand that despite this lady has all this valuable jewel, that she wasn't attached to them. She was willing at any time to give it for devotional service." So generally, whatever decorations for a lady, is that's very, very valuable. But in devotional service, they were willing to give that. So whatever, and we find in many cases, even going to India, sometimes we see there are some temples. I heard many stories that people would go and they would see piles of jewelry in front of deity, that when they go to take darshan, they would take out their bangles or whatever opulence they have and offer it to the Lord, give it the best they have. Even one devotee was telling me the first time he went to Krishna Balaram Mandir, when he saw the deities, he couldn't have restricted himself. He searched his wallet and every penny he had $2,500 US, every penny he took it to give it to make an outfit for the deity. And he was wondering, how would I get back home? The only thing he had his ticket was already booked. And by Krishna's arrangement, where he was staying, they said, "Okay, you can stay here free for the next 2 days until you get your plane ride back." So, you know, it's an offering of gratitude that we want to offer in devotional service, to give the best we have for Krishna's pleasure. In this case, the best that the king had was his daughter, the most valuable. And in our case, might be our practical service and attention. So, I would stop here if there are any questions or comments. Maybe I can take them. So, seeing that there are no questions, we can stop here. Oh, Yamaraj Prabhu, he has something to say.
Thank you for a very informative class. I got a lot out of what you were saying. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai.